Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or simply hoping to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
On yesterday's podcast, we talked about the importance of attachment early in life, because that is what sets the foundation for all of our relationships and our social-emotional development moving forward. Well, today we're going to expand on that just a little bit, talking about or maintaining our theme of psychology in the news and talking about the children removed from their parents on the border.
There's this juxtaposition, these contradictory news accounts, okay, that we've been talking about this week. One is the resilience of the boys in the cave, the Thai story. And I forgot to look it up. I think those boys ended up in a monastery. I think they're novitiates in a monastery, Buddhist monastery. And I forgot to look that up. But that they might do well. They may not have residual traumatic effects because of the social connections that they had with their coach, with each other, because they were a team, and with the rescue divers who came in to help them. So they had all this support, and they were all connected. There was all these connections. The second news story last week were the migrant children who were taken from their parents, and we talked about why that happens, and you don't incarcerate children, incarcerate their parents, and necessarily separate them. But that separation like that can be traumatic for children. And the difference is where the boys from the Thai soccer team had strong social connections, these children had just the opposite. They were taken from their parents immediately, whisked away, put with strangers, and had none of the sort of compensatory or protective factors that the boys from Thailand had. And that's the concern, that when you separate children like that and you don't have any support systems in place, you can create trauma. And that's what pediatricians and psychologists around the world are concerned about now, is what's going to happen to these children.
Well, and the other part to it is that the children, the boys in the Thai cave, there was some hope there. There was some anticipated positive outcome, because they knew that they were, they knew that people knew where they were, and that they were working to get them out. And
that's right.
You know, so that there was some hope.
That there would be a successful resolution. And they had some sort of sense of when it would occur, and that other people were working toward a successful. So there was always this element of hope. Whereas the children of migrants who were taken away, there's a sense of hopelessness and despair setting in. And that's what does the damage, is hopelessness and despair.
So we're pulling some information from an article written on published on July 6th of this year. So it's about a month old, 3 weeks
almost
old or so.
Yeah, 3 weeks.
And we are, and it's called the triple whammy, triple whammy at the border. And it, and I really like these three points that the author pulls out, because it's, these are really important things as it relates to as it relates to attachment, but also as it, just as it relates to overall psychological health.
And they there's much discussion about this. There was a yesterday was the happened to be the court ordered deadline. Thursday was the court ordered deadline for reunification of all 20. I think there were 2,300 or so separations, and yesterday was the last day that, that all reunification should have occurred. There are several hundred that haven't. So it was in the news yesterday. It was a prominent news story throughout the day. And as people were talking about it, there, you know, it's important to understand, and we mentioned this a few times this week, the past week, that because we have taken courses in child development, we know about that 75 years worth of research that tells us the long-term effects of these kinds of separations. Many people don't. I mean, if you haven't studied this stuff, there's no way you would knowing. There's no way of knowing. You just I think the message is you can't underestimate the damage, psychological and physical damage, that can be done with this kind of separation. It's not to be taken lightly.
Right.
And that's what fears. That's what I'm afraid of, is that most people in the country may not realize how significant the effects can be with this kind of even short-term separation.
Right.
It doesn't matter whether it's, I mean, my goodness, a child can get lost in a store for 10 minutes and be traumatized,
right.
You know, or separated for a day and be traumatized. These children have been separated for at least a month or more, and it could have really serious consequences.
Right. Yeah, so when we get in, as we get into the triple whammy, so these are three major psychological principles associated with, you know, the experience that these kids are having.
Right.
And again, I think that it's really great that this author pulled them out and,
right.
and so that we can talk about
yeah,
them.
These are the three issues that we're concerned
right.
about. You
right.
know, that it organizes this whole issue very nicely.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the first whammy is something referred to as learned helplessness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And learned helplessness was first sort of coined by a psychologist, Martin Seligman, back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And he based this upon some research that they were doing with actually with dogs at the time.
Right.
And what they did was they were looking at behaviors and why we behave, animals, humans, we all behave in particular ways
right.
in certain circumstances. And so what they did was they put these dogs in a situation where there was a slight electrical current on the floor of the cage that they were in. And in the first part of the experiment, the dogs couldn't escape it.
Right.
You know, they would, it wasn't anything to seriously hurt them, but it was discomforting.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but the dogs couldn't do anything to escape it.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found is that in the second part of the experiment, where there was a way, sort of one part of the cage was, had the electrical current and another part didn't, even when there was a area that they could escape the electrical current, they wouldn't. And so he referred to this as learned helplessness. The dogs learned during that first part of the experiment that it was hopeless to get away from it, that they couldn't escape it,
right.
and so they just sort of accepted it. This model has been used to explain a lot of really important
right.
things that we look at in our culture and in our society today.
Mm-hmm.
Because when we think about opportunities, when we think about, you know, individuals who grow up in certain areas and we look at the risk factors that they have and risk factors versus resiliency factors, this idea of learned helplessness, the idea that we learn based upon our experiences whether or not we can do anything about our negative situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're in a situation that's really lousy, if you repeatedly experience an inability to get away from it, at some point you will stop trying to get away from it.
Right.
And so, well, we could get into a lot of politics and a lot of social discussions.
No,
with that.
It has important social, psychological, vocational. I mean, you're right. If people don't feel that they have some control, some agency, we call it agency,
right.
They will quit trying.
Yeah.
After a time, and it doesn't take a long time, you will quit trying. That's
right.
the despair part of this,
right.
that these children now, once you're, you know, first of all, these kids will cry,
right.
and then they'll get sad, and then they'll just give up.
Right.
They're at the give up stage. That's
right.
despair.
Right.
And that's what's so damaging.
And the amount of time that it takes them to get through those three parts will vary from
right.
child to child.
Right.
It depends
mm-hmm.
on the age, the
right.
history, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
It does have a lot of political and social implications, because when we look at, again, we look at individuals and we say, well, you know, if he would just pick himself up by the bootstraps and he could get himself out of that situation because look how smart this person is and he or she has all of these skills, so he should be able to take those skills and turn them into, you know, an ability to become a productive member of society. Well, again, because of learned helplessness, right. this entire concept, that may help explain why some people don't or can't do that.
Yeah, you just get to a point where you give up.
Right.
We see it with students all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, students who are failing out of school, they just say, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no point in even trying
right.
because I'm going to fail.
Right.
There's no point in even... That's what I get when I see the question mark on a computer help program.
Mm-hmm.
I look at it and I think, why bother?
Yeah.
I can't read it anyway. I don't understand it. It's a vocabulary I don't understand. That's learned helplessness.
Yeah.
Because I've done it enough times and not succeeded. So now you reach learned helplessness.
Yeah.
It happens.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've all experienced it. And the concern, as this author puts it, is that these kids are getting to that, are at risk, at least, for getting to that point.
And what we're doing, what we've done to these children, is we have introduced into their lives the possibility of, the very good possibility of learned helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
We have put them through a traumatic event that could result in an entire group of kids
mm-hmm.
developing learned helplessness.
Right.
Just the opposite of what we want people to do.
Right.
And these are not changes that go away easily.
Mm-hmm.
Once you yeah. decide that, that you can't, that it doesn't matter,
right.
I might as well not even try. That doesn't go away quickly, and sometimes it doesn't go away at all.
Right.
And we know adults who
mm-hmm.
learned helplessness when they were children, they're still carrying it into adulthood.
Right,
mm-hmm.
yeah, it leads to depression and all kinds of things.
Right.
And you know, I don't know if I should... Well, now that I'm bringing it up, I guess I can't say I don't know if I should bring it up or not.
It's out there.
Now it is. The issue that people will repeatedly voice that, well, you know, we have been removing kids from their parents for a long time. I've read articles where they say, well, you know, a few years ago, kids were removed from their parents for this reason or that reason. And kids are frequently or not... I guess frequently isn't the right word, but in various situations, kids are routinely removed from their parents. And while that may be the case, it doesn't make it okay that we're doing it now and on such a large scale.
John Bowlby was an English mm-hmm. psychologist.
Right.
And we said there's been 75 years mm-hmm. worth of research. World War II ended about 75 years ago.
Right.
Okay. The concept of this, the effects of separation, were first studied mm-hmm. in English in children who
right.
were sent to, who were separated from their parents
mm-hmm.
because of World War II.
Right.
Massive numbers of
yeah.
children. I mean, what were there, something like 50 or 60 million people died in one,
mm-hmm.
20 million German, 20 million, so something in the year, 50 million people died. Many of them were parents.
Mm-hmm.
And so children were displaced. And it was this, and many children were sent to England and never saw their parents again
right.
because their parents were
mm-hmm.
killed. And that's when this issue first came up,
right.
is because they saw the effects of separation
mm-hmm.
in World War II refugees,
right.
child refugees. And that was the group that John Bowlby initially did his research with
right.
those World War II children. And so we've known this since then.
Yeah.
I mean, of what the effects can be of removing children from their parents.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
no matter why.
It's nothing new.
No.
Not at all.
Nope.
So, now, the second whammy is an issue that we touched on yesterday, which is attachment.
Right.
And the concern that these children, their attachment is being fractured, broken, damaged in ways that can be irreparable.
It is, and it's hard to imagine. It's hard to talk to people if you don't understand attachment, if you've not been introduced to the idea of attachment. It's hard for many people to understand how a 1 or 2 month separation
mm-hmm.
can damage the bonds that form between a parent and a child.
Right.
On the one hand, the child is, the reunification is a happy occasion,
right.
but you have still damaged that connection between
right.
caregiver and child.
Right. And you mentioned John Bowlby, and John Bowlby right. is mentioned in this section
mm-hmm.
of this article.
Right, that's what he studied.
That this mm-hmm. is a big concern for
right.
kids who are removed from their parents. And, you know, whether we're talking about migrant immigrant families or we're talking about American families, mm-hmm. you know, attachment can be a very fragile thing.
I'm glad you used the word fragile.
Because when we have, you know, we have parents who work in such ways, for mm-hmm. example, that take them out of the home for right. extended periods of time. You know, if the mother is home with the child, but the father is away or vice mm-hmm. versa, and the child doesn't have the opportunity to create that and maintain that strong attachment right. to the parent, it leads to long-term issues.
Right.
And we see it develop and become more and more profound over mm-hmm. the years, mm-hmm. Even if the parent returns and is home
That's
full-time.
Right.
Because right. As time passes, the lack of that early attachment or the lack of the maintenance of that early attachment is really, really a problem.
Yeah, it is fragile. You know, mm-hmm. there's a special bond between parents and children mm-hmm. that is biological.
Right.
I mean, it has to do with neurohormones and neurotransmitters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you've read all these stories about mothers can go into a nursery mm-hmm. blindfolded and pick out their child by smelling it. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's something in our bodies
right.
that link us to our caregivers. It's especially true with mothers because mm-hmm. mothers are typically the primary, right. not only, I mean, mm-hmm. but mothers are typically the primary caretaker. And it is a very, on the one hand, we say very strong bond mm-hmm. because if a parent
when
leaves a child, mm-hmm. it has a lifelong effect.
Right.
We see this with children of adoption. Mm-hmm. We see it with children who lose parents to accidental
right.
death.
Yeah, right.
When a parent is ripped out of your life, even if you're an adult when your parent dies, there's mm-hmm. this sense of loss that you don't
right.
experience in any other way. So on the one hand, it's a very strong bond.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, your word is correct. It's also a very fragile bond
mm-hmm.
that can be damaged very quickly and very
right.
easily.
Right.
It's not to be trifled with.
Mm-hmm.
You don't interfere with the attachment between a parent and a child. We have all these things about mother. It brings out the mother bear in me.
Right,
you know,
right.
we see it playing out in nature all the time,
mm-hmm.
where bears and other mammals will become very aggressive
right.
if their cubs or if their
threatened.
Offspring are threatened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and humans are the exact. I mean, we're all mammals, and we all have that instinct
right.
in us to protect. But it also is a very fragile
right.
Thing that needs to be nurtured, and we talk about it in child development all the time,
mm-hmm.
that you need to nourish these bonds, you need to nourish these
right.
attachments.
Yeah, and so when we think about this, we look at the behavior over time, and we find that there are some predictable
mm-hmm.
outcome
right.
when attachment is broken.
Is
in childhood, we see a lot of emotional dysregulation mm-hmm. that could lead to anger or
That's
emotional
right.
distress or
mm-hmm.
Depression and anxiety and some of those kinds of things.
Right.
In adolescence, we see that develop into sort of unruly behaviors
right.
and oppositional behaviors and
mm-hmm.
defiant behaviors. And again, it's all related to this notion that our social bonds,
mm-hmm.
our sense of social order and relationships
right.
is
mm-hmm.
is broken, and we don't. Sometimes, again, it's just irreparable.
Right. And the other terrible irony about the particular situation we're discussing with the removal of the migrant children
mm-hmm.
is that when they are placed in the care of these workers, these are government workers, like
right.
human resource workers, there is a no-touch policy
right.
in effect. I think it's for legal reasons
right,
that
sure.
you can't be accused. However, the no-touch policy means that these adults have to sit by while these young children are crying
yeah.
and they're not allowed to hug them or
mm-hmm.
comfort them in any way, and you just have to let them cry.
Right.
And several people have quit.
Yeah.
Several people have left and said, I
sure.
just can't do this anymore.
Right.
To watch a child cry and know that all you have to do is comfort the child. So not only are they removed,
right.
but nobody's allowed to comfort them.
Right. And this thing, perhaps for just a moment, about what that does, what that can lead to with the workers.
Right.
Because this is what it leads to with parents. You know, if you have a parent mm-hmm. who is bonded to their child and cares deeply for their child, so mm-hmm. but the child is struggling and the child is dysregulated or the child is colicky in such a way that the child is unsoothable. Right. You can't calm the child.
Right.
What happens with the parent? The parent becomes frustrated and overwhelmed and gets can become irritable or even angry toward the child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have these workers who perhaps initially want to be sympathetic and mm-hmm. caring and comforting to the kids, but if they're told not to, then it potentially leads to a resentment or a frustration that creates an even more of a mm-hmm. of a separation between the mm-hmm. workers or the quasi caregivers and the kids, even worsening the attachment issues.
It makes it worse.
And it does lead to the third whammy that we'll talk about in just a moment. But it's that whole dynamic mm-hmm. is just toxic.
It reminds me of a story. Frederick the Great of Prussia mm-hmm. wanted to know what the language that was spoken in the Garden of Eden. Mm-hmm. How did they talk to each other? And so he designed an experiment whereby he took a baby, he took an infant from somebody's family. When you're king of Prussia, you could do that. And he raised it with caregivers who couldn't speak.
Right.
Okay. So the child heard no language.
Right.
Cared for, fed, but heard no language. Mm-hmm. Within a few months, the child died of failure to thrive mm-hmm. because there was no connection. What the idea was, let's just leave this child alone, not hear any language. And then whatever language the child speaks is the language that was spoken in the Garden of Eden. The experiment ended with the child's death from mm-hmm. failure to thrive. And that's what this lack of connection does.
Right.
This lack of separating children from caregivers.
Right.
That's the effect that it can have.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. And again, this leads to the third whammy, which is the issue of trust.
Right.
Mistrust versus trust. And these children... one can imagine what they've been told, what they have been maybe promised or at least informed would be happening. This is temporary, or this is, your parents are safe, or this is going to happen, that's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And when those things aren't followed through upon, then we have issues of trust. And that's with the workers, not to mention trust versus mistrust towards their parents.
That's right.
Who really have no control themselves over the situation, the parents. But yet the kids are going to, especially the younger kids, are really going to have a hard time appreciating that the mm-hmm. parent didn't come back because they couldn't come back, as opposed to not coming back because they weren't able to come back.
And you wonder what is going through the child's head, because mm-hmm. they're thinking, why would my parent do this to me?
Right.
The parent's not doing it mm-hmm. to you, but that's the way children's brains work. Why are they letting this happen?
Right.
They promised to protect me. I always thought that they were on my side and that they would be there for me. Why have they left me? Mm-hmm. Why did they abandon me?
Right.
So from the child's point of view, this very much feels like a parental abandonment.
Right.
They don't understand the legalities of all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's why you don't do this to children.
Right.
They don't understand what's going on here, and they're going to interpret it as well as they can given their age.
Especially if, as they're being removed, if the parent says, the parent in an attempt to comfort the child mm-hmm. says, "Don't worry, I'll be back, it'll be okay." And then they're not.
And some of these parents have already been sent back to their home countries.
Right.
The kids are here.
Yeah.
And they've already been sent back. So now we have to find them in those countries.
Yeah.
And the kids are still here. This trust versus mistrust issue, again, can't be underestimated.
Right.
Eric Erickson was the person who taught us about this and said that in the first 18 months of life, mm-hmm. children learn how to trust mm-hmm. other people, particularly their parents, because their needs are met. Mm-hmm. If I'm cold and wet, somebody will come and dry me off and put me in warm clothes. If I'm too tired, they'll let me sleep. If I'm hungry, I'll be fed. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And babies can't take care of themselves, so they rely on adults. And so they summon adults by crying. Well, if the cries are not met, if you cry and nobody does anything about it, then the child becomes mistrustful, mm-hmm. okay? And that mistrust leads to problems throughout childhood and especially into adolescence,
right.
because they become very irritable, angry teenagers.
Right.
Then you start to get into other problems.
Right. The other issue that trust versus this form of trust versus mistrust will lead to, especially with maybe the older kids, is their ability to process authority mm-hmm. figures. You know, what I worry about, of course, is that, you know, these workers that are there are going to be seen as authority,
mm-hmm.
whether they're officers or military personnel or, you know, just others from the Department of Homeland Security and whatnot. Mm-hmm. If the kids see them as, okay, these are authority figures, and these authority figures are, you know, mistreating us or, you know, mm-hmm. won't allow
right.
us to have access to our parents, and they're mistreating us in a variety of ways, it's going to lead to a sense of, I can't trust those who are in authority, those who are mm-hmm. in a position to, you know, who say they're here to help
right.
us,
mm-hmm.
but they're really doing us harm.
Right.
You know, it's going to lead to a lot of those kinds of issues that, mm-hmm. again, as you said, could perpetuate defiance and oppositional mm-hmm. and even criminalistic behavior.
And if many of these people are in uniform,
mm-hmm. right,
then you have people in uniform doing this to me.
Right.
And again, you're not, as a child, you don't make those sorts of subtle distinctions
right.
between, oh, well, that person had this uniform and was doing this. No. As a person in a uniform.
We see it all the time in kids who come from homes where there were, you know, criminal behavior from the parents or
mm-hmm.
from someone else who was living in the home. And when the police, you know, the police come
yeah,
and arrest
right.
the parent or something, that kid develops a mistrust of police officers.
Right. That's right.
And, you know, even when you talk about, well, you know, they're here to help,
mm-hmm.
not to them, they're not.
No, they're here to take your parents away.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, we see that same phenomenon playing out here
mm-hmm.
because just simply because
right.
these kids aren't going to appreciate that.
You know, it really is true. We call the police and they come to protect us.
Right.
Other people call the police and it ruins their lives.
Right.
The presence
from
of
their
a,
perspective. Yeah.
That's right. From the presence of a police officer means that somebody's going to go to jail
right.
likely. We're going to be separated from each other. It's going to cost a lot of money to fix whatever the problem
mm-hmm.
is. So they see police as in very negative ways,
right.
whereas we see police in very positive ways.
Right.
Interesting perspective.
Yeah. yeah.
And that's what these kids will develop.
Absolutely. So we have these three whammies, the learned helplessness, the attachment issues,
right.
and the mistrust versus trust.
Right.
And these three whammies are when you take them together,
mm-hmm.
are potentially
right.
Going to create issues and perhaps even long-term negative consequences on these
right.
kids.
And we didn't say this at the beginning, but as you review each thing, I'm thinking any one of these,
mm-hmm.
like if a child has trust and is attached, but it gets learned helplessness, there's going to be an effect.
Right.
If a child doesn't have learned helplessness but isn't attached, there are going to be problems. We have a group of children here who are getting all three whammies.
Right.
I mean,
right.
they're experiencing all three of these things. And
right.
so the cumulative effect could be even worse.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So again, we just have to, when we think about policies and some of the decisions that we're making, we really have to think about what some of these long-term consequences are.
Right.
Not to say that, you know, people should be allowed to do whatever
mm-hmm.
they want to do, anytime they want to do it, from wherever they want to go. Mm-hmm. But at the same time,
right.
I just don't like zero tolerance.
Well,
so.
I hate zero, right. We hate zero tolerance. It's anything that's mindless.
Right.
We don't like. But if you're on the fence on this issue and you say, well, they're kids, they'll get over it.
Mm-hmm. Mm,
they may not.
Right.
They may not get over it because this is quite a lot of damage.
Right.
I mean, many people don't realize. But the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychological, in fact, the American Psychological Association has already called this child abuse.
Right.
That's how strong their statement is.
Right.
And these are people who know something about child development. These aren't
right.
these aren't This isn't fake news and it's not alternative facts. This is 75 years worth of really good research that we've been over and over and over and over again. Yeah. So there are no alternative facts or alternative explanations. Right. This is very damaging to children. It's very damaging to their parents.
Right.
Should not have happened. And it should be right. It should be fixed as soon as possible.
Right. And regardless of your political affiliation.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with
that. We should all be on the side of, we need to do something different.
Right.
We need to fix this problem and do something different because it's,
I don't pretend, we don't pretend to, I think I speak for both, we don't pretend to know the solution to the immigration problem.
Right.
I have no idea what it is.
Right.
I do know that it's wrong to separate parents and children.
Right.
Do whatever else you want to do.
Right.
Please don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, that is it for today. Next week, we're going to be recording podcasts tomorrow for at least a few days next week. We'll see. We'll kind of see how many we do because we will be in the Philippines next week. We're leaving Monday.
We will see our Filipino brothers.
Yep, we're going to leave on the 30th, and we'll be gone for a week. And while we're there, we're going to record some podcasts, and if I'm able to, I'll try to get some of those posted.
But we'll
certainly have them for when we get back.
Now, hopefully, we can do some interviews while we're there. There are going to be some high-level psychologists and educators
from around the world
there, and we're hoping to maybe do some interviews and bring those back, send those back to you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So, all right.
It'll
so
be an
stay
exciting week.
Tuned for that. Mm-hmm. So, until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.
Thanks for sharing this episode of the Mental Breakdown and PsychReg podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes for links to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you will find all of our previous podcasts and much more. We would be honored if you would become a patron through patreon.com, where any donation you can manage will go to the development and creation of more content. Just visit patreon.com/themental breakdown for more information. Thanks again for listening. Have an awesome day, and we look forward to being back in your feed tomorrow morning. Thank you.